welcome. We have been missing you, and we are happy that you have fully recovered. Honorable members, we have two items on the agenda. Firstly, we will start with the deliberation on the restoration, not removal, on the restoration of Advocate N. Jiba and Advocate L. Mukhoemi from office. And then after that, we will proceed to deliberate on the Deputy Public Protector candidates. Those are the two items on the agenda. We have also invited our lawyers from Legal Services who will take us through the letters that we received from Advocate Mukhoemi. That letter was distributed to all members of the committee. What are the implications? And then after that, we will proceed with the deliberations on the issue of restoration of whether we restore Advocate Mukhoemi and Advocate Jiba to office. Welcome, members of the Legal Services. Over to you. But if I may just add, honourable members, we will meet again tomorrow at 10 to adopt both the report of the Deputy Public Protector and the report of the restoration of Advocate Mukhoemi and Jiba. We are allowing time for the Secretariat to clean up the report and to take into consideration all what members would have raised, so that when we adopt the report tomorrow, it must take all our discussions into consideration. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, since our last engagement, which was around the outcome of the court judgment, there has been two developments. The committee will recall that after the judgment was issued, a letter was written to Advocate Jiba, giving her 7 days to make representations to the committee. In response to that letter, Chair, we received a letter from her legal representative, Mr. Majavu, to which it was attached a letter that was personally written by Advocate Jiba, addressed to the Speaker. The letter, in essence, Chair, says she has had a meeting with her family and she has made a decision to move on with her life. And for that reason, she no longer has any interest in restoration to office. And for that reason, she declined to make any representation to the committee. The letter, of course, continues beyond that, where she expresses her gratitude to the committee or to Parliament for the manner in which it has dealt with the matter so far. And of course, towards the end, she asserts her belief that she has served the country with integrity, despite all the things that are being said about her. And I think those are the three issues that the letter really addresses, Chair. What this means, Chair, is that you have no representations before you from Advocate Jiba. Of course, Chair, you will recall that you have a full set of papers which speak to all the representations she has made to the President right from her suspension up to the confirmation of the decision by the President to remove her from office. So the implication of this, or should I say, the fact that she may have decided to move on, does not absolve Parliament as an institution from exercising the statutory powers that it is required to exercise in terms of the NPA Act. So a decision still has to be made on the issue of restoration regardless of the letter. The second development, Chair, is the letter that we received from Advocate Mukwebi. Again, the committee will recall that in July, Advocate Mukwebi was given an opportunity to make representation, and he has made very substantive representation on why he believes that he should be restored. But on the 31st of October, he addressed another letter to the committee, wherein, in essence, he seeks an opportunity to appear before the committee with his legal counsel and to address the committee. There is a specific issue which he raises on which he believes that he should be allowed to address the committee. The issue relates to the freedom under law judgment which was issued in the North Gauteng High Court. Members may recall that at some point freedom under law took the president, the former president, to court with the view to compel him to institute the inquiry into the fitness of Advocate Jimai Mukwebi. Freedom under law succeeded in the matter. An order was issued directing the president to institute the inquiry into her fitness. But at the time, there was an appeal that was pending before the Supreme Court of Appeal, which related to the case of the General Counsel of the Bar. So for that reason, the court issued the order for the disciplinary inquiry, but suspended the implementation of that order, pending the appeal to the Supreme Court of Appeal, which we now know it proceeded to the Constitutional Court. Advocate Mukwebi's view is that the president, by virtue of that order, was not entitled to institute the inquiry, that is the Mohoro inquiry into her fitness, until that judgment has been delivered. Chair, you will recall that when we went to the Western Cape High Court with Advocate Jima, she raised this point. She raised in a very, shall I say, casual way, in reply. Now, when the court was invited to pronounce itself on the issue, the court was of the view that it is not relevant for Part A, because Part A only dealt with the interdict. The court was of the view that the issue of whether the president violated that order is a matter that should be determined in Part B, and therefore it did not make any specific ruling on whether the institution of this inquiry violated the order of Judge Mutleng. So that matter is still packed, and now it's being raised with the committee, and the committee is invited to make a decision as to whether the president, in instituting this, it violated that order. Chair, I might as well, we got confirmation this morning while we were with the select committee that there has been a notice of withdrawal by Advocate Jiba of the entire application she filed, which essentially means that there will never be an opportunity for Part B to be decided, because she has now filed a formal notice of withdrawal, and we got notification from the state attorney that there is a withdrawal. So that application in its entirety is no longer before court. So it means there will never be an opportunity for this matter to be ventilated in Part B, unless, of course, Advocate Mukwebi decides to file a new application. So, Chair, having said that, I think it is now entirely within the committee's discretion to begin its deliberations and make a decision on two of these letters. Advocate Mukwebi's letter is clearly unsolicited, Chair, because it was submitted out of time. But I understand the letter has been circulated to all the members. It is for the members to consider its content and make a decision as to whether this is something they would want to consider. There is established practice that legal representatives do not usually appear before committees. You may get legal assistance where you believe you need it, but it is you, the individual, because lawyers are not accountable to Parliament. It is the incumbents of these posts that must appear and account. So I think there is an established practice in as far as that is concerned, but again, it is up to the committee to deliberate and decide whether it wishes to have Advocate Mukhoi to appear with his lawyer before the committee. I think, Chair, I'm going to leave it at that. Those are the two developments, and of course the issue of the notice of withdrawal which we received this morning. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, members. That is the update from the legal services. I wish to remind the members that we took a decision when we first processed the matter that we will only be dealing with written submissions. We will not allow people to appear before the committee unless the committee wants to reverse that particular decision. But that is a decision that has been guiding us ever since we started this process. But the matter is entirely before you, honorable members. And I think we must apply ourselves both to the letter written by Advocate Mukhoebe and his representation, which means we are discussing everything for today, so that tomorrow we can adopt the report, which must serve before the House on Tuesday. Honorable members, Honorable Horn, Honorable Hisham Mohammed, in that order.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, allow me on behalf of the DA members here just to express our appreciation for the programming you and the ANC whip were involved in, which enabled us this morning to attend the memorial service of the mother of a colleague of ours, so that's much appreciated. Thank you. Can I just get your guidance, Chair? I have prepared a submission, but it is not a 1 or 2 minute submission. It would take a bit longer. So just in terms of timelines, I know sometimes it's a sensitive issue, but I think if you'll allow me, I would like to deal with it. I will hand it up as well, but also possibly just read it into the record, if that's fine with you.
How long will it take?
I've not timed myself, but I think it is about 15 pages.
Honorable Jose, you will have your time.
Okay, what I will do is I will talk in general to it and then I'll submit it.
Okay, that will be fine.
Okay.
Let me suggest that they do copies for you.
It will be better to do copies for
all of us. So when you speak, we see what you're doing.
It will be circulated by the secretariat to all of us. Over to you, Honorable Horn.
Okay.
And just before you proceed, also let me take this opportunity to send our condolences on behalf of the committee to the Democratic Alliance. You are in our prayers during this difficult time. May her soul rest in peace. Okay. Over to you, Honorable Horn.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. The first issue I really deal with or wants to just quickly address is the nature of the powers and the duty Parliament has in this instance. And I think it's important for us to just reflect on the fact that this is not mere powers of oversight. The powers set out in Section 12(6) of the NPA Act in fact forms an integral part of what is known as the system of checks and balances we have in our constitution. And in that sense, if one think back of the scathing comments the Constitutional Court made in respect of Parliament's failure previously to hold to account the President, I think it's very important that we not only see this as powers of oversight, which in itself is important, but really that we see this exercise as even more important, and that is that it is to an extent boiling down to a right of veto Parliament have on a decision the President takes in terms of the NPA Act. That doesn't mean, obviously, that we can exercise that power in the way we would wish to. The same principle would apply as to all exercises of a public power, and that's that we must follow a reasonable process. And then when we get to the reasonable process and a fair process, I think that the legal advisers has already referred to that in respect of the current letter from Mr. Mukwege. And that is that, in our view, this could be a multi-stage process, but it doesn't need to be. And this first stage is for us to determine on the papers, as per the process we decided on for ourselves, whether there is either serious allegations of an flawed process which was followed in the lead up to the decision by the President, or in the alternative, whether he made himself guilty, and there's initial indications of that, of an abuse of office, in that he acted with an ulterior motive or with some bias. So if I could then get to, firstly, the issue of the process. It is so that Mr. Mukwege brings a substantial attack on the process followed. And I would like to just focus on a few of the issues he raises. The first issue he raises is that the process followed by the President was patently unfair because it was supposed to be a fact-finding mission, which then ultimately ended up being what he calls trial by ambush. He calls it a process that ended in disciplinary sanctions being taken against him by the President without him being aware that that could be the end result of the process. Now, I think with due respect to Mr. Mukwege, that argument can simply not fly given the very simple wording of Section 12.6 of the NPA Act, which makes it clear that the purpose of the inquiry which the President set up is to determine whether the special director in this case are still fit to hold office. So if from that specific wording he could not fathom or understand that ultimately it may end in a situation where he is removed from that position, then I don't think the President could be faulted for that. Another argument raised by him in sort of a circular manner, so to speak, is that given the fact that everybody, in his words, is in this country is subject to labour law and that he's part of the public service, both labour law principles as well as the public service provisions or regulations should have been adhered to. Why I say this is sort of a circular argument, it is interesting to note that he elsewhere in his representations, along with Ms. Jiba, seem to argue, and I'm paraphrasing here, that they should be exempted based on the principles of separation of powers from disciplinary processes. So that in itself also doesn't make sense, but to maybe boil down to what our view is in this regard, and that is that Section 12.6, once again, makes it patently clear that once you are appointed amongst the cream in the NPA, and your appointment and your removal is dependent on the president, then another regime is applicable to you, and you can't then ask to have the comfort of labor laws and the public service regulations itself. Lastly, he seems to argue also that the process then was flawed for the fact that he was confronted during the inquiry with allegations and testimony and evidence which, by the nature of the inquiry, he was not in a position to fully prepare for, and therefore it must be deemed to be an unfair process. Now, in that regard, I think it's important to remember the very important fact that the process ultimately followed, along with the rules of practice at the inquiry, was settled on only after extensive consultations from the secretariat and the evidence leaders of the inquiry, the commission, with the legal representatives of both Mr. Magwebe and Advocate Jiba. In addition to that, it is also on record and quite clear from the record that in instances where either of them, after evidence that was led by the evidence leaders, felt that they needed time to prepare for cross-examination, Judge Mokgoro in all instances had the matter stood down in order for them to have an opportunity to prepare. So in that sense, one struggles to understand why, if you agree to the rules, and if it's quite clear that you had opportunity mid-inquiry to prepare for cross-examination, that you can still feel that there was a flawed process. Lastly, in terms of the process, we have the benefit now of the judgment in the unsuccessful Part A application of Ms. Jiba, where the court, even if only in passing, made a very specific finding that both the establishment of the inquiry, the processes followed there, and the outcome was fair and valid. And therefore, I think we as Parliament can also place some reliance on that finding by the Western Cape High Court. That then brings me to the other leg on which I think they could be attacked. Maybe let me just stop myself. I believe also the letter of the 30th of October, to an extent, is also then an attack on process, if not the process followed at the inquiry, then at least the process followed by the president. I firstly believe that we should not allow for oral representation. As indicated, we have set the boundaries and the rules within which we will deal with representations. Mr. Magwebe did send representations. And Chair, the reality is, what happened here is that there was sort of a new argument or attack found against the process followed by the president only in the run-up to the arguments applicable to Part A. I mean, I hear what the legal representatives of Parliament say when they say that the court ultimately found that argument must be dealt with as part of Part B. The way I understand the judgment is that the court ultimately said, you can't come and present an argument now which was not part of your founding papers. So you didn't put a basis by way of the affidavits in front of the court on which you can then have that argument, and in terms of the rules of court, that's not allowed. So what then, with respect to Ms. Magwebe, consequently happened is that he possibly sat down, reflected on it, and thought, okay, maybe there is now a way in which we finally can say the president overreached, overstepped, and made a procedural error. So I also now wanna jump on that horse. But, Chair, even if we in fairness, want to decide whether we must allow representations based on this argument, I think we must reflect on whether the argument has the slightest chance of success, and in my view, it simply doesn't. If you read the Freedom Under Law judgment,
yes, the court talks of the ultimate appeal, but if you read the judgment in its totality, what happened there is the court was made aware that the GCB matter was at that stage already referred to the Supreme Court of Appeal to deal with. And it's quite clear to me that if you read the Freedom on the Law judgment, the court had in mind the SCA appeal of that matter. But even if we want to give Mr. Mukwege the benefit of saying, yes, there was an appeal to the Constitutional Court, I think we must carefully look at whether there was, in fact, really an appeal to the Constitutional Court. The fact that there's a Constitutional Court judgment in this regard doesn't mean that there ultimately was an appeal. That judgment was brought out to deal with the application that was brought by the GCP to take the matter on appeal to the Constitutional Court. And ultimately that judgment simply finds two things. The one is that there's no constitutional issue raised, which will give the Constitutional Court judgment in this matter. And secondly, there's no, it's not in the interest of justice, or there's no issue that must be solved by way of an interpretation by the Constitutional Court, a matter in law. What the Constitutional Court said is this matter deals more or less exclusively with the provisions of the Admissions of Advocates Act, and that the three-stage test that's used or has been developed to determine whether an advocate is to stay on the role of advocates or to be removed from the role or even to be suspended temporarily, that test is not an issue. It's settled. And then secondly, the court said that even though other arguments around that act may raise constitutional issues, in the current circumstances it doesn't. So ultimately, even if we want to give Mr. Mukwege the benefit to say there was an appeal to the Constitutional Court, the fact is there was an attempt to appeal, and the court rightly said that the appeal ended with the Supreme Court of Appeal. So in my view, that would mean that if one looks carefully at it, there's not sufficient grounds for us to say that we have a suspicion that the president might have been caught out here on a basis of embarking or making himself guilty of a procedural error. It's a technical argument, and if one cuts to the bone, ultimately the last appeal was to the Supreme Court of Appeal, and the president only embarked on establishing the Mahora Commission in the week after the SCA judgment came out. So that would then bring us to the other possibility, and there is allegations by Mr. Mukwege of a bias, both on the part of the president and then on the part of the inquiry. So on the part of the president, the argument basically boils down to that the president bought into one version of events that really turns on political events and things that happened in a politically charged environment. For us to consider whether that raises a suspicion of bias, I think we must go back as Parliament and as the committee to both the different findings of our courts and the Mahora report. In respect of the different findings by our courts, the one judgment that's the most beneficial to Mr. Mukwege is the SCA judgment, which, by the way, in a sideways remark, the Crown Court found that the SCA erred on the facts, but that is the finding that stands. And he's quite correct to say that the SCA decided or found that he was not dishonest in the discharge of his duties, as was found by the Gauteng High Court. But what is not really, let's say,
completely truthful to, in his submissions to Parliament, is that there was still an adverse finding made by against him by the Supreme Court of Appeal, in that the Supreme Court of Appeal in quite clear terms found that he made himself guilty of misconduct. So he now argues that because the President ultimately, the Mokgoro Commission, firstly found that he acted in a dishonest manner, both in dealing with the Mdluli matter and in his evidence in the famous disciplinary at the NPA, now says because the SCA found that he was not dishonest, and yeah, they say that he was not dishonest because he didn't personally benefit from his misconduct. Now, I don't want to, I think we must just leave it there. The reason why I feel he either misunderstands or tries to misconstrue what happens is that there is quite clearly, if somewhat overlapping as the court in the GCB matter said, still two distinctly different processes dealing with whether you're fit and proper to remain on the role of advocates, and on the other hand, whether you are fit and proper to remain as a special director. And the President followed to the letter the provisions that ultimately, in all circumstances, should enable him to make to exercise his discretion in this regard. The fact that the Mokgoro Commission also made findings of dishonesty against Mr. Mukwege cannot point with respect to a bias on either the part of that judge or the President, in the sense that she obviously was there, she observed all of the testimony firsthand, she had the benefit of legal arguments, she had the benefit of analyzing all of the evidentiary documents that was placed in front of her, and with respect, her finding of dishonesty is not the first or out of the blue. So whilst these different processes, I think we are perfectly entitled, and in fact I think we are obliged to accept the findings of the Mokgoro Commission. And that comes back, Chair, to our role in this regard. And I think we must be very guarded as Parliament to not fall into the trap or the let's say the fall into to the big hole that is there, which wants us as Parliament to act as a type of an appeal court or a review court. That's not our role. And in that sense, unless we find a serious procedural flaw, we must accept the outcome of the Mokgoro inquiry. And therefore the last stage, in my view, of this process should be then to ask whether the President either showed an ulterior motive, acted with bias, mala fide, in placing reliance in the way he did on the outcome of the Mokgoro inquiry in making his decision. And with the greatest of respect, I in reading both the Mokgoro report and the subsequent communication of the President with Mr. Mukwege, I don't see that we can ever find that the President took out of the report something that doesn't stand there. The findings of the Mokgoro inquiry establishes serious misconduct and dishonesty. And in the circumstances, I think the President would have erred if he did not resolve to remove from office. So, to wrap up, therefore, we're of the view that we should resolve not to restore Mr. Mukwege to office. If I don't know, Chair, whether you want to discuss the Jiba issue as well at this stage. There was an indication from the legal advisers that we are not absolved from our duty to resolve on the matter. If I may, in maybe a two sentences input, say, yes, we obviously still have the constitutional and legislated duty to resolve on the matter, but to my view, if not stated expressly in a letter ultimately boils down to saying to Parliament, I accept the outcome of the Mogoro inquiry. I think that's also indicated by the withdrawal of that notice, as well as the President's decision to remove me from office. So in that sense, I think Parliament would seriously overreach if we then even consider restoring to office somebody who says, for all practical purposes, I have accepted the outcome of both the inquiry into my fitness to hold office and the decision of the President, and therefore I think we're duty-bound to resolve not to restore in her case as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Horn. Honourable Dose.
Thanks, Chairperson. The recent letter that was written to us, really grounds itself, at least the most substantial question is this accusation of the President to have undermined the Constitution by ignoring a court order. I'm referring here to the letter of the 31st of October. And for now, I want to suspend the rest of the other deliberations. It seems to me, in principle, it's a very serious accusation when somebody says to us, we have a responsibility, particularly in light of what the court said in relation to the Nkandla judgment, to hold the President accountable. It's not a trained match to hear the man. Justice must be seen to be done. It's not. We hear all sorts of people. And I think that it will satisfy the idea as well in the public's mind. Remember, we were a public organization. We've got an obligation as well to demonstrate. I think it will also satisfy the public's very imagination of how justice is conducted. And I'm here suspending everything else, because it's not wrong to pose and tease Mukwebi on all these matters that he wants to ventilate. So I'm ready of the view here that it doesn't mean we are not going to take the decision that it seems members of Parliament are gravitating to. But let's accept oral representation. I'm not sure that these people played a significant role, a very important role in the NPA. So I think it's not a trained mesh. That's my respectful submission, that the deliberation that the DA has just gone through can then be considered together with all others who want to speak to issues relating to the process, relating to the substance of the inquiry's report. But we can do that on both stages, but I really don't see a problem with hearing the advocate and satisfy ourselves that we did not really rely on a written submission. We did a written submission, we listened and then we deliberated, we took the decision, which can be whatever decision at the end. That's really what I have to say. At this stage, I don't want to deal with the interpretations of different legislation and court decisions at this stage, because I think, what's wrong with listening to him?
Okay, Honorable Isha Mohammed. Honorable Jali, I noted.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start off by saying that we note the submission by Advocate Jiba at this stage only. We deal with it progressively when we conclude on the two matters, on the merit, just to formalize matters then. Let me secondly just express our procedural perspective and not into the merit at this stage. The facts are the following. We know the Western Cape High Court on Part A made a decision and felt that there's...
Can you speak to the mic?
And felt that there's the Western Cape High Court, that there's certain process to be followed within the competence of Parliament, meaning this committee. That's been set. And the court also expressed itself that that it is Parliament that will make decision in terms of the process that is laid itself, that we have now laid out in terms of our rules. Now, what is it that Advocate Mwebe is saying? He's saying basically the argument relied on by Advocate Jiba in her application in terms of where the President erred in proceeding, notwithstanding the freedom and the law judgment, he did not advance that argument because he was dependent on her application. Secondly, he acknowledges in his representation, that is not to say that on one side he says that Parliament will not act and take this into account. Then he goes further on, he's not sure this committee will do so. But it's not clear, despite the judgment in the Jiba matter, that he still didn't make any supplementary representation to that very same point. He says, and I quote, "I have not in my representation that I previously provided dealt with this aspect." The question is, so why don't you now continue to do so? There's nothing here in front of us. He submitted this letter of the 31st of October. He could easily have done that so in terms of this aspect of Section 83, 165.4 and 165.5 that he says the President heard in proceeding with the matter. But even that argument is now water under the bridge. It's a moot point because the decision has been made on that. Now, we are not, as a committee, we will obviously have to take that aspect into account when we deliberate on the process itself. We are obliged to do so in any event. So I find it difficult, Chair, to know or to understand what is it that Edward Mwebe will enlighten us more, that which he has not done already in this letter, in his previous correspondence. He almost, not directly, but indirectly says, you know, this section, in terms of the freedom under law judgment, has not been followed, there's an error by the President procedurally, all of those are moot points. When we deliver it, we'll have to take that into account and make a decision. So I can't see the logic of what is it that he's going to advance here. He says, to conclude, Chair, he says, I want to address Parliament on the matter to provide my perspective. What perspective? You already outlined it in the letter. He says in all his correspondence. So it seems that it's to take what Dr. Losi is saying, nothing, maybe he wants to ventilate and we need to be seen, to be transparent, justice needs to be seen, to be done. Yes, but also at the same time, we agreed in this committee to go and follow a particular process. The The process was, as you reminded us earlier, Chair, that you can make representations. We never stopped that process. There was a continuous submission. So I only see him here in front of us saying, if he can't remember, we know the court of law, he can't go, we've got all record, and go take us through the Mohoro judgment, inquiry and decision, report, we have that. He can't take us to the various judgments, we have that. His perspective is what? He's outlined it here. Right? So for that reason, Chair, I don't see any reason why we should, unless we want to have some so-called transparency. Transparency was within the process already dealt with. So let me pause there for now, Chair, before we come. As we said, we haven't dealt with the merit at this stage. Thank you.
As we proceed, I think it will be also important to ventilate on the question that was asked by Judge Haney to their legal counsel. Judge Haney asked the question, why did they not interdict the process? If the president did not follow or disobeyed the law, why did they not interdict the Mohoro report, the Mohoro process itself, because it was relevant then? I think it would be important for us to take that question, that judge's question, into consideration. Honorable Jelle.
Thank you, Chair. And let me just note the presentation by our legal team, and also the presentation by the letters that are made by our the people that we are here about. But Chair, I think starting from where you left, as I'm sitting here, I was also thinking that if Advocate Mkhwebi was taking this process serious, he should have done the very same thing that you have just alluded here, that they should have interdicted. And also, even with us, when we requested them to make submissions, I think they should have indicated that though the committee has taken this decision, but they would love to come in person and make a presentation. They had an opportunity to do that. Thank you, Chair.
Sorry for interruption. If I may just check, is that for voting? Can I suspend these deliberations until after we've voted? Thank you.